Does everybody know everybody here? Yes. Your friends, your family, or? One family. And then? She invited you. All right. You're welcome. Okay. Well, in the evening, we've been discussing Canto 10, Chapter 12, which follows Chapter 11. And Chapter 11 is a wonderful chapter. Chapter 11 is Krishna's childhood pastimes. Has the residents of Vrindavan, or the Brijbasis, the cowherds, moved from Mahavan Gokula to the other side of the Jamuna River to Vrindavan. And there's the whole section is child Krishna from when he was three years in 4 months until he became around 5 years old, that time frame. And so his first exploring of Vrindavan and his fascination with the cows, going with Nanda, he and Balaram wanting to take charge of some of the cows, and they were so enthusiastic. The cows were so big and they were so small. It was decided to give them charge of the calves. So they took charge of the calves. And then their playing activities, because they would go out with the calves, but they would just play. Then, the course of that chapter, they left Gokula because there were problems with demons and falling Yamala Arjun trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and other kinds of dangers for the children, and fresh grasses for the cows. So they shifted, but in this chapter 11, there's two demons, Vyomasura and Bakasura, and those are described. At the end of the chapter, the boys return, and the parents go, "How did it go?" And, "Oh, you know what Krishna did today?" And they hear this and that. And they're feeling joy. Krishna was protected. They're feeling concern. They're feeling parental feelings of love for Krishna. And the love of the Brijbasis for Krishna. So earlier chapters is largely parental affection. Then it's shifting to friendship with the cowherd boys, when they're really young. And then chapter 12 continues with, they're a little bit older, but it's the focus is on the affection of the sakas. We hear lots of things. There's different kinds of sakas. There's different kinds of suhrids, boys that are friendly, but they don't play. The sakas, they just play. They have different kinds of intimacy of their playing, but that's their life with Krishna. So we're going to be hearing, starting with chapter 12, text number 6, about the affectionate exchanges between Krishna and the sakas, the cowherd boys. So here we go. Sometimes, there's this word quachit that shows up all the time. Sometimes, Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then, all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one saying, "I shall be the first to run and touch him. I shall touch Krishna first." In this way, they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. Earlier commentaries explained that feeling impelled to be by Krishna's side was a vibhava. Vibhava means an expression of bodily ecstasy, an expression within one's body of the ecstasy that's resting upon, the ecstasy that's resting upon is their friendship. And when they're one of the bodily transformations that comes from the ecstasy of friendship is wanting to be with Krishna by his side no matter what. And if he drifted into the forest, they would search for him or they would run for him and say, little pride, we'll be the first one to touch him. So, you know, little boys' behavior, but the emphasis of the acharyas is going to their ecstasy of love. And so here's a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which says, when Krishna wandered off in the forest to see the beauty of the forest with a few boys, the others would run after him to see who could touch him first, shouting, I will touch him first. No, I will. No, I will. And by the way, there's a lot of cowherd boys. We heard from previous verses, something like 10 million. That's a lot. I mean, how many people in the city of Detroit? Anyway, 10 million. So, and you know how many cows? A sankhya. So we won't go into it. It's like, it's a lot of cows. Jiva Goswami writes, five verses show the special love and complete devotion to Krishna while the boys played. Krishna did not generally leave the boys and go far away, but if he sometimes went far off with a few friends to see the beauty of the forest, the other boys would obtain happiness by touching him with embraces, some sprisha. The attractiveness of the forest is suggested. And further commentary is, when Krishna wandered off to see the beauty of a distant forest, the boys would run after him, shouting, I will touch Krishna first. No, I will. No, I will. Now we're going to read a long section. I hope you enjoy it. It's Sanatan Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Does anybody here need a little introduction to Sanatan Goswami or his Brihat Bhagavatamrita? Would you like me to? Yes, okay. You all know who the six... Is there anyone needs an explanation of the six Goswamis? No. We're all good. Okay. So chief amongst them, of the six, eldest, and the one who was looked to as the superior, is Sanatan Goswami. If you look in our line of disciplic succession, it's Rupa and Sanatan. And sometimes it's Sanatan, and sometimes it's Rupa, but Rupa and Sanatan. They were brothers. Sanatan was the elder brother. And Rupa looked up to Sanatan like guru. I mean, not just like elder brother, but like guru. And so both Rupa and Sanatan wrote commentary on Bhagavatams with the name Bhagavatamrita. We talked about this. It was one of his questions. Bhagavata Amrita. The Amrita of Bhagavat Kata, and Sanatan Goswami's title was Brihat, so Rupa Goswami named his Lagu. Very pleasant ring. I've heard some other ones that are a little more bouncy. So, lago means light, and brihat means great. So, there's two parts to brihat Bhagavatamrita, part one and two, and part one is it's a narration of Narada Muni on a quest to find out who is the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And they're all superlative personalities. They're all perfect personalities. That's described by Sanatana wrote the book. He wrote a commentary to the book. So in his commentary, he explained they're all perfect. But there's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. And the conclusion of part one is the residents of Vrindavan are most perfect. It's a long, the text is this thick with commentary, but that's the conclusion. And part two begins by saying, well, that was just a warm-up. Now comes the real thing. So, and the real thing is, it's a narration about a cowherd boy, Gopa, and his age is Kumara, so he's called Gopa Kumar. Nice name. And Gopa Kumar is having a discussion with a brahmana, an elder brahmin, who has some existential questions about himself and about life and about how to be happy and how to find real happiness, and so those kind of questions. And Gopa Kumar says, normally one doesn't talk about oneself, but I can't think of a better way to answer your question than by describing my experience. And so he goes through explaining his experience of, in two parts that are, each one that thick, so there's a lot, and it gives a picture. I mean, it's Veda cosmology and what's the layers of the universe like and what's on the other side of the layers of the universe and everything. What's Vaikuntha, what's Ayodhya, what's Dwaraka, what's Mathura. He goes to all those places and finally makes it to Vrindavan. So that's the storyline. But it's very deep. And the section that we're reading from is there's three personalities, Narada Muni and Uddhava and Gopa Kumar. And they're talking about, at this particular section, is Krishna's pastimes with the cowherd boys. They're not in Vrindavan, they're speaking about Vrindavan. And he goes there. So this section is on the topic of the cowherd boy's relationship with Krishna. That's the focus. Because that's a large part of what the earlier part of Canto 10, Chapter 12 is. So here we go. So attached to Krishna's company were the cowherd's little sons that they acted just like his shadow, even if for a moment they couldn't see him. If he sometimes went away on a whim, they were filled with distress. And when he returned, they would rejoice and rush to touch him. Commentary. Krishna's cowherd friends were with him constantly. Sometimes, however, Krishna would leave them for a short while to pursue some other interest, like seeing the beautiful sights of Vrindavan. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.6, that verse we just read, Shukadeva Goswami describes how, when Krishna returned from those excursions, and friends would greet him. And then two chapters later, sometimes Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Same theme or mood. Then all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one saying, I shall be the first to run and touch Krishna. I shall touch Krishna first. In this way they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. This is a commentary on Bhagavatam by Sanatan. So he's taking the text, rephrasing it slightly, and then continuing. Commentary. The cowherd boys who constantly accompany Krishna are certainly superior to the aborigine forest women. That's from the previous text. So not just the gopis and the elders and the young gopis, but there's forest-dwelling ladies that are described, and they were completely, when they heard Krishna's flute, they went mad, and they had love for Krishna like all the other residents of Vrindavan. So now this comparison, the cowherd boys are even superior to their intensity of attraction for Krishna. So in the context here, this is chapter 7, it's Maharaj Parikshit speaking about Krishna's pastimes. So usually it's Sukadeva speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, but here it's Maharaj Parikshit speaking. Recites six verses to praise those cowherd boys or Gopu Kumaras. The first three verses are spoken by Shukadeva Goswami in the 10th canto, chapter 12, verses 6, 11, and 12. So we're going to read them. And then the commentary. They, the verses, describe how the boys joined Krishna in tending cows. Very early in the morning, the Supreme Lord, eager to enjoy the day's countless pastimes like killing Agasura and eating lunch on the grass, called out to his friends by bugling on his buffalo horn, and they came out of their houses by the thousands, tending thousands, millions, and billions of calves. They all set out to the forest. They decorated themselves with forest ornaments of fruits, twigs, and other items, and sported by playing their flutes, blowing their horns, imitating animals, and playing, quote, keep away with another's lunches. That's one of the earlier verses. Keep away? I've never heard that word, but somebody would leave their lunch, and then someone snatch their lunch, and when he found it was gone, hey, give me, so then they'd throw it to another boy who'd throw it further away and throw it further away, and they're playing, and the boy would cry, and then they would laugh, and they'd give him his lunch back. And then they would do that with his rope, or his stick, or his flute, or they just, like little boys, but Krishna's happiness is at the center. They played all these games simply for Krishna's enjoyment. They had a chance to touch Krishna and embrace him, which gave them the highest happiness. In their eagerness, they competed to see who would be first to touch Krishna. Sometimes the beauty of Vrindavan and other forests would so beguile Krishna that he wanted to go alone to explore them. But he was so attached to the company of his friends that he would leave them only for a short time. Then the boys would run after him, trying to follow him on his solitary side trips. The cowherd boys were not satisfied unless they could be right there with Krishna and able to touch him. The next text. In this way, this is a translation. It's a paraphrase of a verse from chapter 14. In this way, all the cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, used to play with Krishna, who, for the impersonalist jnanis, is realized as the bliss of Brahman, who, for devotees in eternal servitorship, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who, for ordinary persons, is but another ordinary child. So their piety is, they're just playing with Krishna. They're not trying to realize anything. Commentary. Amazed by the incomparable good fortune of the cowherd boys, Sri Badarayani, Shukadev, continues to praise them for joining Krishna in his cow tending and other such pastimes. By associating so intimately with Krishna, these boys were directly experiencing the transcendental happiness of Brahman realization. Krishna is the supreme worshipable deity of saints, Satam, who have been given the privilege to enter his service. Satam also means liberated souls. Krishna's friends in Vraja are liberated persons who take part in the happiness of knowing Brahman, the absolute truth. Most people, however, are not liberated. They are mayashritya, bewildered by the Supreme Lord's power of illusion, and therefore they consider Krishna an ordinary cowherd boy, Nara Dharaka. Satam can also be understood to indicate the seekers of spiritual knowledge who realize Krishna in his impersonal Brahman feature and enjoy the happiness of knowing Brahman in that way. But to Vaishnav devotees who consider themselves Krishna's servants, Dasyam Gatanam, Krishna, the Supreme Master, Para Daivata, gives himself, submitting himself to their control. Material nature bewilders the entire creation, but Krishna's pure servants bewilder him by the strength of their pure love and thus defeat material nature. Paragraph. Taken in another sense, Maya Shatanam refers to Krishna's beloved gopis who worship the goddess Maya with choice mantras. This is reference to the gopis worshipping Katyayani. You familiar with that? No? Katyayani? When the gopis were of a certain age, they develop attraction for Krishna. So they observed a vrata called Katyayani Vrata that's done during the month of Magh, coldest month. If you've been in Vrindavan during that December-January month, at night it's really cold, so before the sun would rise, they go to the river Jamuna, worship Katyayani with the following prayer that you're going to hear in a moment, wanting to have Krishna as their husband, and then bathe in the ice-cold river Jamuna every morning for a month. And the Katyayani that they worshipped was the internal potency Katyayani, not the demigoddess Devi, but the internal potency Katyayani. So here's each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship while chanting the following mantra. Oh, goddess Katyayani. Oh, great potency of the Lord. Oh, possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all. Please make the son of Nanda Maharaj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. That's a direct quote from Bhagavatam. Now, they're non-envious. They're all saying, they're all offering the same prayer. And how many of them can marry Krishna at once? Well, they all marry Krishna. But, they're not understanding Krishna's ability to marry them all, but they're all, it's pretty amazing. They're not envious of one another. That's pretty amazing. And wishing that Krishna become their husband. So this kind of, you know, intense vrata for that purpose. The gopis could see Krishna only as an attractive youth, Nara, Dharaka. They gave no thought to his godly omnipotence. As if ordinary girls, they simply focused their attention on him as the sole object of their desire and affection. Or, another reading, the same Krishna, who is the constant companion of the cowherd boys, is also amorous appeal personified for all human females, Nara, Dara. Or else, Krishna figuratively tears apart all persons, Naran, Darayati, by filling their hearts with unique love for him. Of course, Krishna's attraction in the conjugal rasa is most appropriately described in relation to women, but because the gopis presume every human being to be like themselves, they think that Krishna tears apart the heart of everyone and fills it with love. This presumption is suggested by the use of the masculine form of Naradharakena, which can be grammatically understood to include both males and females. Now, this is Sanatan Goswami's commentary. Continued. Accepting that Maya Shatanam refers to the gopis, in this verse we have a hierarchy in which the devotees in eternal servitorship are higher than the gyanis and the gopis are still higher. Thus, in this verse, which glorifies the cowherd boys, the greatness of the gopis is also to be seen. Paragraph. The cowherd boys of Vraja. To become eligible to play, as they do with Krishna, must have performed heaps of pious deeds in their previous lives. The word punja, or great quality, implies that these boys must have had an inexhaustible stock of pious credits, and the word krita and krita punya punja, as in the similar expression kritartha, or having achieved the success of one's life, indicates that their past pious works were of a very special quality. Pure acts of sacrifice offered to the Supreme Lord for his pleasure. Or, the word punya in this context can be interpreted to mean activities of pure devotional service, for Krishna says himself, Dharmo mad bhakti krit prokta. This is Uddhava Gita, Canto 11. Actual religious principles are stated to be those that lead one to my devotional service. Or else, krita can mean the ancient Satya Yuga or Krita Yuga, when the great souls who were later to become Krishna's friends performed faultless meditation on the personality of Godhead and became all-around perfect Vaishnavas. This is commentary on the same verse. It's a few verses too. Although the darling son of Nanda Maharaj is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, very few persons are fortunate enough to know him as he is. The knowers of the impersonal Supreme realize him in the form of Brahma Sukha. In other words, within their hearts, they can enjoy only the perception of his existence as pure spirit. And even most Vaishnava devotees realize Krishna only as the embodiment of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Lord. Burdened by a sense of reverence for him, they worship accordingly and experience a corresponding quality of bliss. But Krishna's beloved gopis in Braja realize him as Sri Nanda's younger son. Freed from theoretical knowledge and reverence, that would damage the treasure of their most exalted love, they experience the highest prema. This truth has been stated repeatedly in Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita, but it cannot be overstressed. Paragraph. The gopis are always beside themselves with transcendental anxiety due to the excessive love they feel for Krishna. They, usually, cannot be with him during the day. And even in their nocturnal meetings, they do not feel as completely free to enjoy with him as they would like because of the constant threat of opposition from their families or from their husbands. The cowherd boys, on the other hand, are always free to play with Krishna in varieties of pastimes, both at home and in the forest. Therefore, their good fortune is most exceptional. Paragraph. This does not contradict the many statements of Srimad Bhagavatam that confirm that the blessed gopis are more exalted and fortunate than all other beings. Rather, it indicates that the revered Shukadev, in the core of his heart, is a follower of the gopis' mood of devotion, and therefore, while elaborating on the wonderful pastimes of Krishna and the cowherd boys, and glorifying the boys for being able to play constantly with Krishna in the forest, he speaks like the gopis themselves. Shukadev's style of praising the Gopakumars as supremely fortunate is non-different from the way the gopis themselves describe as the perfection of vision, the sight of Sri Krishna's face while he sports in the forest and here's the translation. This is the final text of that purport. So the gopis are speaking. Oh, friends, the eyes that see the beautiful faces of the sons of Maharaj Nanda are certainly fortunate. As these two sons, surrounded by their friends, enter the forest, driving the cows before them, they hold their flutes to their mouths and glance lovingly upon the residents of Vrindavan. For those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. That's the end of the purport. And now we're going on to the next one. That's 37122. And the translation reads, yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births, yet in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, they will still be unable to taste even a particle of the dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can we describe of the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, with whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally lived, and who saw the Lord face to face? And this is a shorter commentary. It reads, the good fortune of the cowherd boys in being able to see Krishna face to face defies description. What to speak of how blessed they must be to be able to play with Krishna constantly? The cowherd boys and all the residents of Brajabhumi are the most fortunate beings in creation because they can look directly on the beauty of Krishna. Dedicated yogis endeavor for lifetimes to approach Krishna, but for all their labor, they can never hope to become as fortunate as the Brajvasis. Even one particle of dust from Krishna's feet is impossible to achieve for yogis who do not follow humbly in the footsteps of the devotees of Braja. Paragraph. The meaning of, quote, the dust from Krishna's feet may be understood in several ways. It can mean a single atom of his feet. It can mean the marks of his footprints in the dust of Brajabhumi. It can mean dust that has been in contact with his feet and then shaken off somewhere in his wanderings. It can also refer to anything that has been even indirectly in contact with his feet, no matter from how far away. In other words, pada, pangshu, or dust from Krishna's feet, can be redivided and modified to padapa, angshu, meaning the effulgence or angshu emanating from Krishna's favorite kadamba trees and the other trees, padapa, of the Braja forest. Even the most distant contact with Krishna, pada, pangshu, in any of these senses is, for mystic yogis, a rare accomplishment. Determined yogis, in their attempt to succeed, practice severe disciplines such as brahmacharya and other austerities. For many lifetimes they struggle to steady themselves by withholding the mind and senses from material objects. But even if they achieve the success of samadhi, they cannot achieve Krishna, who is the full embodiment of spiritual perfection, Satchit Ananda Gana Murti. He is beyond the purview of the senses. Only the Vrajabhasis can see him as he is. The form of the Supreme Lord, visible in Vraja, is not a vibhuti, one of God's opulent expansions, nor is he a partial incarnation of Godhead, nor is he even Lord Narayana. He is the original source of all forms of God, yet viewable by the cowherd boys like any other perceptible object, and constantly fixed, stitaha, in their sight. In other words, he never leaves the path of their eyes. How then can the exalted fortune of the Vrajabhasis be even adequately described? Translating Shukadev's question in a different way, Kim Varnyate Dishtam asks whether the condition of the Vrajabhasis is the result of their fate. The answer, of course, is the Vrajabhasis situation is not the karmic effect of past pious works done in previous lifetimes. It is solely the result of Krishna's mercy. Or, dividing words in another way, the fortunate condition of the Vrajabhasis is a perpetual festival, Dishta Maho. Or, the power of their good fortune is inconceivable, Adishta or Adrishta Maho. The pure devotional service of the Vrajabhasis displays all these features. A discriminating reader may question the placement of this verse, which tells of the good fortune of merely seeing Krishna after the verse depicting the special fortune of the cowherd boys in being able to always play with Krishna. The good fortune of playing with Krishna automatically includes the good fortune of seeing him and goes beyond it, the reader may argue. So placing these items out of the natural logical order of lesser to greater, general to specific, is a fault in poetic style. To accommodate this reasonable doubt, we may construe Shukadev's statements in yet another way, churning the topics of Krishna. The boys who enjoyed playing with Krishna are indeed extremely fortunate, and this verse amplifies that assertion by showing that actually all creatures living in Vraja are fortunate beyond description. It is easy to prove that any resident in Vrindavan is greater than the most accomplished yogi. So, it naturally follows that the boys who live so closely with the Personality Godhead are so uniquely dear to him and are, of all living beings, the most exalted. We can also say that Shukadeva is continuing to glorify the cowherd boys in particular. These inhabitants of Brajabhumi, because Krishna is the constant object of their vision. The eyes of the Gopakumaras see Krishna and nothing else. As a general rule, each individual sense has its own proper object. The sense of sight perceives only visible forms, not taste, smells, and other sensations. But the attention of the boys is so engrossing in Krishna that they are disregardful of whatever else is present before them. The eyes of other people perceive various objects like pots and cloths. But wherever the cowherd boys turn their eyes, they see only Krishna. That is to say, they see everything in relation to Krishna. The poetry of Jayadev Kavi illustrates this kind of special vision. We quote from Gita Govinda, Pashyati dishi dishi rahasi bhavantam. In every direction, in every secret corner, she sees only you. Thus it is appropriate for Shukadev to speak this verse after the previous one, since even greater than the cowherd boy's good fortune of always playing with Krishna is their being always able to see him everywhere. This marks their love for Krishna as being almost as good as that of the gopis. There's two more, but just pause because reading suddenly like this, it has its joy, but one appreciation is our acharyas, Sanatana Goswami in this case, he's deriving happiness taking the verses of the Bhagavatam and tasting them in different ways. I'll tell a little Jamuna story just for breaking the flow here. Mother Jamuna, the Prabhupada disciple, Jamuna Dasi, one of the children in ISKCON that grew up in Gurukula is now a celebrity in ISKCON, a virtuoso kirtanier. Name is Janavi from the UK, Janavi Harrison. And she was just expressing her appreciation for Jamuna on her birthday, which was May 19th or something like that. And she shared some things that other people shared with me, because I know her. She's very deep person. So she was saying in Gurukul, we learned the song, the little song that you say, little Sadira Vijaja Jatendriya Tehika Jivi. So she just recited like everybody else did. And then she got into Jamuna's association, and she would just go into ecstasy singing the song never in the same melody. Her life was a life of celebrating Krishna. And then she would ask Janavi to taste very carefully and explain to her what the ingredients are in what she was eating. And then she would tell stories of Prabhupada that when the court, this is just Jamuna and tasting, the refinement of tasting. She heard that there was a particular really, really, really special grain. It wasn't rice, it was some kind of a grain. And she purchased some. And she personally ground the grain into flour and she made a preparation for Prabhupada and offered it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada took just a bite and chewed it carefully and told her exactly the type of grain it was and where, what part of the country it came from, and said, if you left it on the fire for another 2 seconds, it would be better. And just the other day, there's the Acharya series part 5, and one of the things in that Acharya series was Prabhupada making recordings in recording studio, a group of devotees surrounding. And so he was playing mridanga. And as he was playing mridanga, he was just playing the beat. And then he said, you know, the mantra, the mridanga mantra that you're supposed to say when you're playing that beat. And then he gave the mridanga to somebody else. No, you try. They're in the middle of recording. And Prabhupada, later he's holding the mridanga again and said, my father never wanted me to become a materialist. He said there was at some point in my education, there was an opportunity to go to England and become a barrister. And my father insisted, no, my son is not going to become a materialist. This is, you know, Prabhupada speaking. And said, he wanted me to learn all these things. Then he moved his hand like this and said, you know, one should learn all these things, the art of cooking, the art of music, and because they're devotional expressions. He didn't, like, elaborate. He just said it. And so he was expert in... And our acharyas, they're expert in tasting the topics of Krishna. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya and his principal associates would do the same thing. Now, not exactly necessarily like this, because each person is a little different, and how they taste the topics of Krishna in the association of others is going to be a little different. But this is Sanatana Goswami tasting the topics of Krishna. Looking at it this way, looking at it that way, and not saying if, you know, this is right or that's wrong, the different ways of tasting the topics of Krishna. And, you know, something starts to emerge, and that is attraction for Krishna in varieties of ways of what strikes your heart may be different than what strikes another person's heart, but attraction for Krishna. Or hear the same thing in a different way because we're different people. But attraction for Krishna is the goal. And revealing, Krishna is being revealed in these writings or in these pages. Next text. Sometimes, Lord Krishna grew tired from fighting and lay down at the base of a tree, resting upon a bed made of soft twigs and buds, and using the lap of a cowherd friend as his pillow. And now, Sanatana Goswami says, these are verses taken directly from chapter 15, and three verses in a row, 16, 17, 18, and he's explaining them. It's Bhagavatam commentary. But so the focus is the cowherd boys. And then at different stages and different moods, it's the cowherd boys and their love for Krishna. Here Shukadev Goswami describes some of the services the cowherd boys did for Krishna while he rested in the forest. These pastimes were part of Krishna's Pauganda Lila of tending his cows in Sri Vrindavan forest. Krishna would enjoy lying down to rest at various times. When fatigued after wrestling with his friends, for instance, and in various places, such as the cool breezy shore of the Jamuna. To rest comfortably, he would choose the base of a kadamba, tamal, or other tree with ample shade. Anticipating Krishna's daily pastimes, goddess Vrinda would have beds of leaves, flowers, and soft young twigs waiting at the bases of those trees. And sometimes Krishna's gopa friends would arrange this bedding when they arrived. Even though Krishna lay down on only one bed at a time, Srila Shukadeva Goswami refers to the beds in the plural, because either many devotees were involved in making them, or simply out of great respect for the paraphernalia of Krishna's pastimes, or else because the cowherd boys would compete to make several different beds, and Krishna would expand his universal form to please all the boys by simultaneously laying down on each bed, unseen by the makers of the others. Krishna would accept as his pillow the lap of his most intimate friend, Srimati Radharani's brother, Sridham. Next, I think there's just two more now. Some of the cowherd boys, who were all great souls, free of all sin, would then massage his lotus feet, and others would expertly fan him. Commentary. When Krishna's cowherd friends, who loved him so much, saw that he was fatigued, many of them responded immediately, doing whatever they could to relieve his discomfort. In the flurry of activity, the boys were so overcome by ever-increasing affection for him. Many boys would massage his legs, either one boy at a time or in turns, or else all the boys massaging various places at once. It may also be that to please his beloved friends, who all wanted to serve him in this way, the Supreme Lord manifested his all-pervasive form. Without leaving aside his form as the son of Sri Nanda, and allowed a huge, because remember there's 10 million cowherd boys, a huge crowd of cowherd boys to massage his feet simultaneously, each unseen by the others. Thus, Krishna displayed his supreme powers even in his childhood pastimes, as expressed in a later verse of the Bhagavatam, 15th chapter, by the words Isha Cheshtata, or exhibiting feats only God can perform. With this in mind, instead of taking the word Mahatmanaha in this verse to refer to Krishna's friends, we can take it as referring to Krishna, the Supreme Soul. In these pastimes, Krishna demonstrates the greatness of the Supreme Being even more convincingly than in God's typical activities like creation. In these childhood pastimes, Krishna shows his power to enchant the entire world with his sweetness. And the last paragraph for this text. Shukadeva Goswami speaks of Krishna's friends as Hata Papmanaha, or persons who have their sins destroyed. For ordinary pious persons, whatever contradicts the principles of religion is sin. But for devotees of the Supreme Lord, sin is anything that obstructs pure devotional service, and is the sense, and that is the sense that applies here. Namely, the cowherd boys of Vraja have not the slightest inclination to do anything that does not please Krishna. Krishna himself is also called Hata Papmanaha, in the sense that he destroys the sins of all the worlds by displaying his glories for everyone to hear and chant. And the final verse for this evening from Brihat Bhagavatamrita. My dear king, Shukadeva speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, other boys would sing songs appropriate to the occasion that would enchant Krishna, and the hearts of the boys would melt out of love for him. That's one of the verses from chapter 15. Commentary. Some of Krishna's friends sang songs with sweet, gentle melodies just right for his nap time. This encouraged him to fall asleep quickly. Krishna is the most exalted of persons, graver than the combined depths of millions of oceans. But these songs fascinated him because they described his loving dealings with the gopis, and his mind was strongly attracted even to the parts of those songs that merely glorified his devotional service in general ways. It may be that here Shukadeva Goswami uses the words Mahatmanaha ironically. Unable to control his ecstasy, Shukadeva calls Krishna a great soul, with the understanding that Krishna is actually the prince of womanizers, who shamelessly indulges his lusty propensities by stealing the clothes of the coward daughters, making them appear naked before him. The songs sung by Krishna's friends for his pleasure inspired intensified prema, which melted the boys' hearts. They sang softly, their voices choked with tears of ecstasy. From this, we can know that even though pure love for Krishna arises in the course of all kinds of devotional service, it appears most quickly and fully when one performs sankirtan by singing songs dear to Krishna and otherwise glorifying his name and fame. As stated in the previous verse, the boys who served Krishna while he rested were hata papmanaha, free from all sin. They were great souls, extremely advanced in devotional service, each capable of purifying the entire universe. Thus, as they performed their individual services for Krishna, they felt more and more love for him, and their hearts melted in ecstasy. And again, the word Mahatmanaha applies equally well to both Krishna and his friends in the final paragraph. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami addresses King Parikshit as Maharaja. This may mean that the pastime of Krishna's being served in royal style is fit to be heard by a king. Or it may imply that the kings, like Maharaj Parikshit, can hardly expect such luxurious comforts. Or describing to Parikshit the supreme fortune of the cowherd boys creates an upsurge of loving feelings in Shukadeva Goswami's heart that makes him address Parikshit as Maharaja to attract the attention of the king, who is also overwhelmed by the bewilderment of pure prema. Or Shukadeva calls Parikshit Maharaja, the best of royal class, because only King Parikshit is competent to understand the sublime good fortune of these cowherd boys. Or else the term may indicate that the fondness cherished by the cowherd boys for Krishna is supremely splendid. It is the Maharaja of loving sentiments. Although this sneha or love is always present within the boys, in this setting of intimate service, it now rises to the peak of its potency. It radiates with infinite brilliance, leaving all contamination far behind. So we kind of did a little detour from the flow of the verses in chapter 12, but the theme emerges. I mean, where this is going is killing of Arishtasura, but you know, part of the prelude to Arishtasura being sent by Kamsa and lying in the middle of the path is the playful mood of the cowherd boyfriends, the sakhas. Again, the predominating feature of, according to Acharyas, of that particular type of friendship with Krishna is just playfulness. And they're playing and playing and playing and playing and playing. Here comes a gosser and they're playing. It's just another playing activity. And if it is what it looks like, then Krishna will take care, no problem, let's go. Let's go explore the cave or serpent or whatever it is. So the observing all of this is Brahma. Now, some of the texts say that Brahma is with the devas who are also singing his glories. There's other picture that says he was just happened to visit flying on his swan carrier, and he observed the whole scene. And then right after Agasura is killed, they all go have lunch. And he's immersed in amazement and appreciation of the intimacy, of the love of all the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. And he also has this curiosity. And his curiosity gets the better part of him. Like, what's the limit? And one of the ways of Krishna's mystic powers. So one of the ways to examine that is he tested his mystic powers against Krishna's mystic powers. What's Krishna going to do? The Acharyas say maybe he's going to cry. Maybe he'll come to me and say, please bring the cowboys back. I mean, so he got bewildered. The initial was not like a confrontational. It was a curiosity. Like, you know, we might be curious sometimes. Trying to understand Krishna, but, you know, one thing not to do is don't go mess up with Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan with the cowherd boys. That's a no-no. But Krishna didn't admonish him. You know, he did a bad thing. But anyway, the focus in the first part of the whole chapter is the cowherd boy's love for Krishna. The whole tenth canto is particularly the Braja portion, where in the morning class we're on chapter 36, the killing of Arishta. And then we're already in Kamsa. Narada goes to Kamsa and says, you better get Krishna because he's the eighth child of Devaki. It's, and so forth. There's still, but the Braja pastimes are winding down. And it covers 36, 37 chapters. But it's the most exalted. There's 89 chapters in the 10th canto. And 37 of them are Braja, and the Braja pastimes are most celebrated. And so it's worth taking the time with the guidance of our acharyas to consider very deeply this most profound perfection. What does it look like? What are they feeling? How are they speaking? How are they conducting? What's perfection look like? And you know, even on the inside, what their emotions are, very confidential, very special literature. So, let's see if there's some discussion on any of these topics. What we've been doing, we start with people that are gathered with us, and it gives a little time for the people online to send their chat questions in, text questions. So if there's anybody assembled here that wants to discuss a topic.
Just an observation. What I found, the simplicity of cowherd boys, you know, just enjoying the pastimes with Krishna, just to touch him first. I mean, that just was pure joy for them, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's one observation. And then you mentioned about the term perpetual festival. It seems like just being in the company of Krishna was a festival every day. That was what stood out to me.
Every moment.
Every moment, yes.
Well, here's the this particular day, just to expand on what you said, this particular day, he got up really early. It was planned. He told them the day ahead of time. And then he normally his mother would wake him, but he got up without his mother waking him. You know, think parenting. You know, 4-year-old boy, and he got up without his parents waking him. And, you know, he got dressed real quickly, and he got his buffalo horn, and it made such a sweet sound that all the boys, 10 million boys, and the calves, the Sankirta calves, moo, and then, you know, off they go. So it's an early, but you know what, he was so eager and they were so eager, and it's eager for what? Eager for this continuous festival. But he also knew what was coming up later, the Gosura, because he's omniscient. So he moves back and forth between omniscience or exhibiting it and just being absorbed in the, you know, the pastimes. And he, you know, very fluidly moves between them. And that's part of the festival. When he exhibits his Aishwarya, it doesn't, you know, it's not a big deal for him or for them. It just very quickly moves into, you know, this ecstasy of their love with one another. That's the festival. Okay.
Guru Maharaj, you're talking about the piety of the cowherd boys. Mm. Like it was so, even the yogis and great meditators couldn't, the piety of the cowherd boys. So I was just like, just by hearing that, it was so nice. And also I was just thinking, somehow it is coming to my level. Somehow we might have committed some pious thing that we are got a contact in process of Krishna consciousness. This is the piety, or is the also if we don't use it properly now, or what I'm understanding is if I don't follow this, take up this process properly.
If you don't use it, you lose it? Is that your question? Well, first is three things. First is the definition of piety. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a really nice short purport where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is quoted. And there's bhog sukriti or bhog anmukhi sukriti, moksh anmukhi sukriti, and bhakti anmukhi sukriti. So anmukhi means unknowing. So there's knowing and there's unknowing. So in short, the punya of the cowherd boys is not the first two. It's the third. So how many pious activities? Just like in the Bhagavatam, punya shravana kirtana. So it's not material piety that results in elevation to heavenly planets and worldly opulence in this life and in the next. It's not that kind. That's bhog sukriti or punya. It's devotional service. Devotional service, devotional service, devotional service, devotional service. That kind of punya. Spiritual transcendental. So spiritual transcendental doesn't get lost. It may be, we may get amnesia. We may, you know, become forgetful, you know, in the less than the perfect stage. You know, like the unsteady bhakti, the sine curve of unsteady bhakti. It may be, you know, higher or lower, rising and falling. But it's never lost. But progress towards the goal or perfectional stage comes with steadiness and then further. You know, the up and the down, the amplitude of the sine curve diminishes. And it becomes, the axis starts sloping up instead of horizontal. So, it's not that if you don't use it, you lose it. You, if you don't use it, it may become temporarily covered over, but it's never lost. The spiritual piety, that kind of what the Cowherd Boys did to get to that position. And then there's one other point, and the other point, this other point is, there's Nitya Siddha Cowherd Boys, Nitya Siddha residents of Raja. And then those Nitya Siddha living entities, they manifest in Krishna's manifest pastimes as Prakat Leela, and when the Prakat Leela is completed, they return to Nitya Leela in the unmanifest form, Aprakat form. But there's another group, and the other group is those that are sadhana siddhas, you know, the how many lifetimes. That same question, this the same comment of that's found in this chapter 22 about the Cowherd Boys. It comes in chapter 8, where Shukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit, hearing about the love of Mother Jasoda, goes, wow, what good fortune. What activities did Jasoda and Nanda do to get that good fortune? As if you can become Jasoda and Nanda. And there's an interesting answer that's given at the end of chapter 8, and then it's converted to chapter 9, where you don't become Jasoda and Nanda. They're eternally Jasoda and Nanda. But, you know, so rather than reviewing that because we discussed it, part of it, Maharaj Parikshit speaks that about Jasoda and Nanda, and this verse is spoken by Shukadeva, where he's just like, it's an expression of ecstasy. How fortunate. And then the comment is, like the gopis. He's speaking like the gopis. How fortunate. And saying, what kind of pious activities? So, it's not pious activities. They're nityasiddha personalities, or sadhana siddha personalities. So, what sadhana did they do to get that siddhi? You know, it's an appreciation. It's not like, you know, it's not material. The material paradigm is, I achieve this, then I achieve that, and achieve that, and achieve that, and climb the corporate ladder and become eventually, you know, something, CEO or something. It's not like that. Not like that. It's, you know, there is, as we're just hearing, is they're recipients of this enormous mercy. They're qualified, but they're also recipients of enormous mercy. That's how. Okay, is that? Okay.
So it's like Lord Brahma, like we are hearing, like he was curious and he was just checking out the
stuff. Yes.
So, but Lord Brahma is the one who have created all the living beings.
Yeah.
Because he must be the one who have created, not created Krishna, which means he must have known like Krishna and
yes. Well, Brahma Samhita, and he's already there. So how did he lose being there? That's your question?
Yeah.
Did he slip? Did he have a boo boo and
so it's just like a pastime or it's just like
yeah. It's like Arjuna be falling into forgetfulness, it's Brahma falling into forgetfulness. And there's a purpose to it. The purpose is twofold. Well, three. He gets a chance to experience this special, and it's in his prayers, chapter 14, the special position of the residents of Vrindavan. So much so that he says, in my next life, which is after this universe is over, in my next life, somehow by good fortune I can take birth somewhere in Vrindavan. That is, you know, being Brahma is the top of the mountain. And he wants to, you know, that's nothing. That's really something, is taking birth in Vrindavan. So that's important. So the special position of the residents of Vrindavan, the special position of his humility, that beyond all of what he knows and can do and has and powers and this and that, looked up to the chief of the demigods, nothing compared to the Brijbasis. That's taking our hearts there. And a third is just like, you know, Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, or Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita to Uddhava, Brahma's getting the chance of speaking very eloquent prayers for our edification, so we can recite them. And there are certain verses that are recited again and again and again. Lord Chaitanya accepted one of his verses as the goal of life and how to achieve it. Out of all the verses, and he rejected some of our favorite verses. You know, Sarva Dharmam Pratyajan supported the one that Brahma spoke instead. So he was given the opportunity to be the person speaking very important messages. So there are different purposes in his becoming forgetful. There's others. I mean, for that 1 year, if the facility was provided for the elder gopis to have Krishna as their son, and the cows to have Krishna as their calf, he facilitated that. It was like multiple things. Okay? Anything else? Well, they didn't see him as God. They just saw him as their dear friend. He exhibited his divinity, but they didn't see him that way. Their love was so strong, it eclipsed their awareness. He did so many. Yeah. Let's just take, you know, lifting Govardhan Hill. Just take that one. What to speak of all the other ones? Just take that one. And everybody saw it. And when they were thinking, wow, we get to be with Krishna for 7 days and 7 nights. Like, you know, he was saying, it's just thrill, just to... And then, you know, they don't just have to touch Krishna. They can see him. He's a festival for their eyes. Because at the end of the day, he goes home. And the cows are in the goshal going, moo, we want to be with Krishna. The coward boys can't sleep. They can't wait till the next morning they can be with Krishna again. Because that's everything for them. So, they saw the lifting of Govardhan Hill. So, who can do that? Nobody. So he's showing his divinity. But, you know, they just talk about, like, wow, Krishna's wonderful. Microphone, please, because of people online. Outside of Vrindavan, the curtain opens a little more. And in Dwarka, it opens even more. But it has everything to do with intensity of love. So here's this rule. Let's think of Krishna showing the universal form to Arjuna. And what happened afterwards? And you know, I've transgressed etiquette. We were speaking, lying, talking, hanging out, you know, buddy buddy, and this, you know, I made a, you know, that was not right. So the intimacy becomes pushed to the side by Aishwarya. So, depending, Krishna showed us Aishwarya as opulence. You know the meaning, right? Aishwarya. Krishna showed us Aishwarya so many times, so many ways. So many times, so many ways. I mean, killing of Arishtasura. Because that's what we're just discussing in the morning. This guy is really huge. The hump on his back has clouds around it. It's so high. And they're all looking up at this, to specifically the Sanskrit, they're looking up. And when he steps, the whole earth shakes. And he's like pawing the ground and he's like, you know, snorting, and he wants a fight. And they're really intimidated by that guy. So what does Krishna do? Puts his arm on his friend and insults him. You've come for your death. You're finished. You've tormented the cows and the Vrijbasis. You're going to the boat of Yamaraj. And smiles. So he finishes the guy. So, yay! Time for lunch. They see his divinity, but they, you know, his opulence. But you know, their affection is so strong. And then, so now we'll go outside. Your question: what about outside? Well, there's a mix. And it goes further and further. Less intimate, more of the opulence. You with me? Krishna KO'd Kamsa. You know, he had everybody intimidated. So all these demons were kings and powerful persons that he subjugated. Either you submit and serve me, or I'll kill you. He was a really powerful guy. We're going to hear some more about it tomorrow morning. Really powerful guy. I'll tell the story now. He's a really powerful guy. You know how he got Kuvalyapida? There's a story. There's a description in Garga Samhita how that happened. Here's the story. It's really nice. He was conquering kings. Traveling here and there, conquering kings. So he was out somewhere and had a little camp. Over here is Jarasandha. And he was on a hunting expedition, and he came across this huge elephant, and he captured the elephant. He had him tied down by a chain. Four legs. Kuvalyapida ripped up the chains and the stakes and began running. And Jarasandha went chasing after Kuvalyapida to catch him again, second time. And as he was running, Kuvalyapida ran to the place where Kamsa was, by the side of a river. Kamsa picked up Kuvalyapida, which, you know, 50 men couldn't capture, and twirled him around and threw him in the air, and he came crashing down on his head in the camp of Jarasandha. So Jarasandha went, "Wow, that was good. I want to find out who did that." So he went to find out, and it was Kamsa. And he said, "Really good. I'll make two gifts to you. This elephant and my two daughters. You can marry them. They'll become your queens." So this elephant was known to be wild. So when Krishna killed him, it was a big deal. wasn't just like a big elephant. He was like an infamous big elephant. And then when Krishna killed Kamsa, the two wives went back to Daddy, Jarasandha. Oh, Krishna just killed her husband. Take revenge. And he took revenge, you know, take a vow. 23 Akshohini. So, like, that's how the whole thing happened. He is so powerful. He took this, not just Krishna, but took the elephant, twirled him around, threw him in the air miles. He was powerful. He subjugated so many kings because he wasn't just mean and cruel. He was very powerful. Who was he in his previous life? Ravana. How powerful was Ravana? Yes. Not only they became free from sin, but they became liberated. Okay. Next we're going to go online so that our people online don't feel they're being neglected. We got some feedback. Hey, wait a minute. This is... Go ahead.
So Maharaj, the way I always understood it is that Jaya and Vijaya became Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and then Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and then Shishupal and Dandava.
Yes,
so
Kamsa is told... thank you for that correction, because I said something that wasn't correct. He's told he was Kalanemi, killed by Vishnu. So thank you for that correction. I mean, maybe you weren't intending to, but thank you anyway. Yeah. Killed by Vishnu. Online?
Questions by Sanchari Mataji. Are the cows and animals the only ones who can be witness to Krishna's pastimes, no matter what time of day or group of his dear friends and girlfriends he was with?
No. The cows also, there were times of the day they weren't with Krishna.
Next question. When thinking about creation, it's very difficult to think of everything as always existing. That the only aspect that was truly created was the material world, but that Krishna, his associates and his Dham always existed. Is this need to pinpoint an origin for everything, even God, a product of this world which rests on a cycle of birth and death, or creation and annihilation? I mean, this is such a...
Do you understand the question? I'm confused by her question. Krishna is the origin of everything, that which is eternal and that which is temporary. He's the origin of everything. So to say he's the origin of everything, it does not mean once upon a time there wasn't the spiritual world. Krishna looked at his watch and said, you know what? I think it's time to have a spiritual world. And boop, there's the spiritual world. It's not like that. It's from him, but it is eternal as he is eternal. And he is the source, and there's that which is from the source. And that which is from the source is not the source, although they're co-eternal. And then there's the material world. That Prakriti is eternal, but the cosmic manifestation isn't. So it's manifest and then withdrawn. But the Prakriti is eternal. And the spiritual realm is never... The pastimes for our worldly vision may be seeable or not seeable, but the pastimes are eternal. And Krishna may, of his own icha shakti, his own will, manifest so people can see and receive benefit and hear, chant, remember, etc. And then even when they're not visible to see with these material eyes, they're still going on, and one can hear, chant, remember them. So I'm not really sure what she's... That may not be, you know, directly addressing her question. If I haven't, she can send another message and see. Next question.
This is from Shrida Das. He's saying, please correct me if I'm wrong. Gopis were worshipping the internal potency of Krishna, goddess Katyayani. Could I kindly know if there is a difference in worshipping a demigod who is an internal potency and one who is not, and one who is not, to get Krishna or Krishna's worship?
One cannot worship something material to get something spiritual. So that's explicitly the explanation given. There's a purport in the Bhagavatam where there's a discussion between the personified Vedas and the Shrutis. No, Shrutis and the Kumaras, something like that. And they're having like this conversation. And the conversation is saying that the way that one gets access to Krishna of any kind is through his internal potency. So they were worshipping the internal potency. The demigods or demigoddesses cannot give Krishna. That's not a function of the demigods or demigoddesses or shaktis. So we touched on this topic yesterday evening. You know, worship of Indra and worship of Shiva and worship of Katyayani and worship of Devas and Devis, which was part of the Vrijvasi's life. But they weren't worshipping the worldly personality. And the worldly personality may have, you know, gotten involved, like Indra got involved. But, you know, their consciousness is not that. Their consciousness is the pleasure of Krishna. They don't know anything else. And so it's the internal or the prototype, the internal potency manifestation of those personalities, which is not what Krishna is advising against in Bhagavad Gita. We discussed this yesterday. The person asking the question can go listen to the class recording from yesterday because we talked about it at some length. Next.
This is from Prajeshwari Pranadevidasi.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, if Kamsa was killed by Lord Vishnu in his previous birth when he was Kalding, why didn't he get any kind of liberation?
Because if you're killed by Vishnu, you don't get liberation. If you're killed by Krishna, you do. He became freed from the reactions of his sins, but the sinful propensity wasn't taken away. Just like Daksha was beheaded by Lord Shiva, he sought forgiveness from Lord Shiva for his behavior. The forgiveness was there, but propensity wasn't gone. So he became Daksha Part 2 and did the Daksha program again. So same with Kalanemi becoming... But Krishna's power surpasses that of Vishnu even, specific to, you know, many things. But from the position of Kamsa, he became delivered, not just from his sins, but liberation. If this person asking the question really wants to go into it further, there's a really nice purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where it discusses this topic specific to Hiranyakshi and Ranikashipu, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and Shishupal and Dantavakra. when Krishna killed them, they were liberated, and the otherwise, they were released from sins, but and elevated in their powers and so forth, but their sensual propensity wasn't gone. So they can look it up. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's it? Anything else in the room? Or we're good. You have something. Yes, it's described like that by our acharyas. Contact of Lord is benedictory.
So, like, why is it like both Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, and it's like widely known that they were like so strong that even like, demigods feared them.
Yes.
But like Shishupal wasn't, or Dantavakara, neither of them were like kind of
as powerful.
Yeah.
But they had other opulences.
Feeling, I wish I was that sucker, so that I...
Yeah.
So that also is there, like...
Yeah. There's room for everybody. And there's room for more than everybody. There's no limit. Krishna's unlimited. Don't think limited. Their satisfaction is complete. Now, you're not thinking like we think. So don't think that they're thinking like we think. Oh, I'm one in a crowd. Not like that. It's said when Krishna was having lunch, each of the cowherd boys felt, he's so attached to me, he can't take his eyes off of me. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was engaged in dancing, they all felt the same way. He's looking at me alone. He's so attached to me. It's just, you know, it's a potency of the personality of Godhead. That, we, you know, ordinary people don't have that potency. There's nothing lacking. There's nothing... They're full. And they're feeling the fullness of Krishna's reciprocation. It's unique. It's transcendental. So, are we done? Anything further?
There's again a question, but it seems like people online, there's some voice distortion for them.
There's what?
So the voice is getting distorted. They're not able to hear.
Okay. So what should we do? Just call it a night? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.